Welcome to another thrilling, exciting episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies, our first show of the new year, and joining me as always, Bill McCuddy.
Hello, and Happy New Year.
And Bill Bregoli.
Maybe it's cold outside.
I'm Neil Rosen, and you know what we're going to do? We're going to look back at last year. We're going to start off the new year with looking back at our favorite movies of 2015, and the movies we hated the most in 2015. And we're also going to talk about let's start out by talking about some current events, what's going on. We were talking just before we started this podcast about how Star Wars is going to...
Nothing but Star Wars.
There you go. The musical stylings of Bill McCuddy, ladies and gentlemen. Be kind to your waitresses. They work very hard.
Listen, this thing has taken off like a rocket, huh?
Unbelievable.
These kids in the Star Wars has really made something here.
Have they counted the money from the toys yet?
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, here's some facts. They say that this week, as we sit here on a Tuesday recording this, that today it will probably break the all-time domestic record of Avatar, which is $760-some-odd million, which took 48 weeks to achieve that particular
goal.
That's
the interesting
thing. And this did it in 17 days. Yeah. I mean, that's just crazy.
Again, 48 weeks to amass what Avatar. So where in 17 days, if we're tied now, where can this go? How big can it be?
Well, they're looking for
how
the elusive billion-dollar bonanza payday. $1 billion domestically.
Right.
It's already hit over $1 billion.
And a half. It's a billion.
Right, billion and a
Here's
half
the key.
International.
It doesn't open until, in China until like the 9th, right?
Right, and it's this, in China, you should know, is the second biggest movie market in the world. So how many hundreds of millions of dollars,
you know,
is
what?
That going to add?
Not as much as the numbers would indicate, because apparently the Chinese aren't all that aware of Star Wars.
Really?
Yeah, they're not. They had to do a premiere there.
They've
and
never
everything.
Seen Bill Murray sing?
They've never seen the originals because they're in the middle of the Cultural Revolution at the time that things were going on.
It's still going to make a substantial change in the numbers.
Still,
I mean, you
well,
know. I mean, I think so.
There's no tanks rolling into the multiplexes over there. No,
no
one's have to stand in
no,
the square.
No, I'm sure it'll do fine, but just not just by the fact that there are so many Chinese doesn't mean that it's going to.
Okay, so
I think Avatar, like something like 100 million was made up of the Chinese market when it opened. So I think that's what they're thinking is going to happen here.
But what's interesting is, I mean, you know, what's the average price? I mean, sad to say that because we go to screenings because we're critics, what's the average price of a movie ticket? 15, 18? I mean,
it is in Manhattan. I think nationally it's closer to like $10 or $11.
Yeah.
And what if you go to a 3D IMAX film or 3D film? I know they can jack
around
up the
country,
price.
$22 here in Manhattan.
Okay.
$22.
Okay, so if you adjust these figures for inflation. Gone with the Wind is still the highest grossing film of all time.
And frankly, I don't think anyone gives a damn. I think it's all about these modern numbers. And yeah, sure.
And Star Wars, the original Star Wars, is like number three. And I don't know what number two is adjusted for inflation. But The Godfather was on that list.
A lot of people don't know this. It's Dr. Detroit. The
no, it's Police Academy 5. Police Academy 5.
Is that
5.
The Sharon
Stone? Which is so much better than the other Police Academies. When you look at the canon of the Police
but
Academy
we
film.
We digress.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We really do.
So that's in the news. We've been serenaded by some studios over the holidays, invited to different things.
That's true. Let's talk
into maybe our Oscar picks or what we think are best and worst of the year, because we're whores, basically. If you buy us lunch, we'll think better things of your movie.
Well, McCuddy and I mean, without sounding like name-dropping, we've gone to these luncheons and these dinners. I mean, we went to a Spotlight.
And a tea? Are they doing breakfast? They're jamming more into... We didn't have teas before. We didn't have breakfast brunches with George Miller.
Well, this is all campaigning. It's all campaigning for Oscars, and the nominations are going to come out next week, next Thursday, actually, as we sit here. That's when they're going to be announced.
Oh, and the Golden Globes are this weekend.
Yes, the
favorite.
Golden Globes.
Ah, the Golden
Ricky
Globes.
Ricky back in the saddle.
That's right. The liquor will be flowing.
Yeah. Please, stop me if I've told this story on the podcast before. The history of the Golden Globes.
No, you haven't.
Okay.
I think people should know.
Okay, you should all know about what the sham of the Golden Golden Globes. Okay, and I think, Pergola, you're going to agree with
me. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
Right.
Favorite group of people.
All of a sudden, they think it's a big, prestigious award. Here's the deal with the Hollywood Foreign Press and with the Golden Globes. The Golden Globes, originally, let's go back 30 years or so. There were four award shows. There was the Oscars for movies and the Tonys for Broadway and the Grammys for music and the Emmys for television. And then Dick Clark, the media mogul that he is, had this brilliant, it was a brilliant idea. And he goes, you know, look at the ratings on these award shows. They're great. You know, we should do another award show. And it shouldn't be just movies. We should do movies, and we should do television, and we'll get everybody, and we'll get great ratings. And he goes, well, do we invent our own award show? So he looked around, and he found this thing called the Golden Globes, and I don't even think they had an award ceremony. I think they probably
It was a luncheon, I think, and it was on like TBS or it was something.
No. I'm getting to that. I'm getting to that. No, originally, I think they just mailed you the thing. You've won the Golden Globe, you know, and they gave awards for TV. But I'm not positive of that.
Actually, it was on the envelope. Well, so you may have already won a Golden Globe.
They being the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, and we have to back up and explain who those people are.
Well, they're like, you know, the Hollywood Foreign Press could be a guy who writes a newsletter in Peru that has a circulation of like 25 people.
The Penny Saver this guy writes for.
I mean,
they're all based in and around the Los Angeles area. They're writing for foreign, supposedly, publications, and there are only like 90 of them, and no one knows who all of them are. But a couple of years ago, it was pointed out one of them was selling washers and dryers at Circuit City.
It was either 60 Minutes or that show. I don't even know if it's on ABC anymore. They still have a show called 2020. I don't know if that's on anymore. But they did an expose on the Hollywood Foreign Press, and they went to their headquarters. It was a building in Los Angeles, and they wouldn't open the door. And it was like,
you can't even get in. Even if you're a foreign journalist, if you're a legitimate foreign journalist, and I know several.
Like you work for a critic for like CNN International.
I have
or
a friend
or
who's a Norwegian friend who. Is in several publications.
Well, we all knew Jorge, too.
I like Jorge. I don't want to put down Jorge. I like
him. Not putting him down. I'm saying he's a credible foreign.
Yes, he is.
Right. And
yes.
Some of them they don't even know how to get into the organization. It's bizarre.
But
and
no,
if you do
it,
really,
it's people. Look, maybe with the internet now, it's different. But it used to be like, yeah, this guy writes a newsletter that goes to, you know, 30 people in Honduras. And he's like a member of the Hollywood Foreign Press. And it's, I find it weird when Clooney.
Like, this is like a group that literally goes out and tries to get the studios to buy them dinners, to take them.
They get the best gifts. They get the best swag. And if you do a junket, I've done several junkets, and I'm saying, well, why is the press conference late? Well, the talent is all busy having their photos taken with the members of the family.
Yeah, they do.
But doesn't it piss you off when you see like George Clooney get up there and accept an award at the Golden Globes and go, I want to thank the Hollywood Foreign Press, like in the words of Seinfeld, you know, like, who are these people? I mean, really, like, who are these people?
Right. You know? But here's the good news, in a way. First of all, they put on a decent show because
it's a great show. It's more fun than watching
like
the Oscars.
Tina Fey or Amy Poehler, this year Ricky Gervais. It's
open
funnier.
Bar.
There's an open bar.
Yeah, everybody's loaded.
And the show has gotten better in terms of picking decent movies. They've overhauled themselves. Look, they know what we're talking about.
Look, this group gave Madonna Best Actress for Evita.
Their nominations are a party. They're party invitations.
They sold.
And they have
they sold Pia Zadora one. For Butterfly, it was notorious because they said, "No, wait a minute, even she can't."
So let me finish the story. So anyway, so Dick Clark goes, "Okay, there's this group called the Hollywood Foreign Press. They give out these things called Golden Globe, and look at this—it's just what we want. They have television. They give out television awards. They give out awards. It's not even a Best Picture. They give out musicals, and they like so we can get everybody to this party. You know, Dick Clark is going. This is great. So he signs a deal with them, and he puts it on. As you were saying, McCuddy, he puts it on TBS, which was cable station, and it's on and." With very little promotion and advertising, the show does incredibly well in the ratings. And again, this is a time before there were all these other award shows like the People's Choice Awards and the Country Music Award. I mean, so it does really well. So Dick Clark was really a genius when it came to, you know, understanding media. And so he goes to NBC and he signs this long-term deal contract with NBC, and they make it this huge thing. So everybody goes, oh, it won a Golden Globe. But you and I, all three of us know what a the credibility of the people voting for these things, you know, is.
It's not the Critics' Choice, or it's not the BFCA, and it's not the New York Film Critics or the LA Film Critics. They can't ignore good movies. And some good movies get recognized, and you get some, you know, Christina Lotti is in the bathroom, and when she wins, and then, you know, you get moments like that that just don't happen at the Oscars.
It's a much more enjoyable show, as I said. I mean, I'd much rather, wouldn't you rather watch that show?
It's fun. They're all blasted.
Yeah, they're all loaded, but it, you said it pisses you off too, right? I mean, who are these people, right?
Not especially working side by side with them. They're annoying.
I know.
I'm trying to interview somebody, and you get somebody for me. When are you going to make a film in Paraguay? Is their big question.
Oh, gosh. I know. So you're saying Pia Zadora bought one.
Yeah, her husband bought it for her, a rich guy, and so they can be bought, literally.
And everybody's a winner. You have best musical performance, best picture,
the categories.
And then you have best drama comedy, and then you have best sitcom. I mean, you know,
best drama comedy.
They're notorious for, what was the Johnny Depp, Angelina Jolie movie?
The Tourist.
They're notorious for nominating things just because big stars are in them so that that red carpet happens. And you're right, Neil, they brought TV and movie stars together, and that made it a big deal, not only for people at home, but for the TV stars who normally don't get to hang out with all of those people.
Right, so Jim Parsons is going to look, he's going to win a Golden Globe, but look, I get to hang out with Julia Roberts and Leonardo DiCaprio. That's right. Emily Blunt is hanging out with, gets to hang out with her husband who was on a sitcom.
Yeah. John Krasinski.
I know. Speaking about that, we on our TV show, and I always say this on every show, this is a after show for a television show that we do called Talking Pictures on Demand, which airs in New York on New York One and airs nationally on Time Warner Cable and looks at out of the hundreds of movies that are on demand. Most people are only familiar with a couple, but there's all these great things there. And as Bill McCuddy always says,
we watch the bad movies so you don't have to. This week on the show,
we did an Emily Blunt movie.
We're going to get to that. That's next week. That's coming this weekend. But the show that's currently on is our best and worst of the year, which leads us into this conversation.
That's true. We don't have to build up to this dramatically. Bergoglio, what was your favorite film of the year?
Spotlight
was your favorite film of the year. That's something.
Thanks for telling him that. He didn't know it.
Spotlight is such a great film.
I had such a wonderful irony when I watched Spotlight, because the day I watched Spotlight, I was in a screening room on 7th Avenue that we all know, Magno. Uh-huh. Two blocks away on that very same day was the Pope himself. And given the plot of Spotlight, I love that.
Oh, that's
irony.
Great.
Now, did you invite the Pope in to see the film with you?
No, I couldn't have a plus one. They wouldn't allow a plus one.
Otherwise, I would have, yeah.
But it's the Pontiff.
Well, Spotlight, of course, being the movie about the real-life investigation in 2001, that the Boston Globe broke the story on the pedophile priests in Boston and the cover-up by the Catholic Church. And, you know, when I did my 10 best, I kept going back and forth between two movies. Spotlight, should that be my number one film? Or should Brooklyn, a movie with Saoirse Ronan about an Irish immigrant in 1952 who comes to America, leaves her family behind, and is very homesick, and gets a job in a department store set up by the Catholic Church, by the way, and is really miserable until she meets this Brooklyn guy who's a plumber, an Italian guy, and I think it's a lovely movie. And I kept saying, Spotlight, Brooklyn. I said it's almost a tie, really, but Brooklyn, since everybody's so into this numerical order, I've made Brooklyn my number one because it just touched me. It touched my heart. It really, really did. And what's your number one?
Neither of those films are on my top 10 list.
Seriously.
I surprised no one because my list has been running around the internet. Room is my
Room's a good film.
And it really surprised me. It took me to a place, obviously, that I wasn't expecting to go. And I like also Love and Mercy. That was my number two. I've been talking about that film all year long. And
Love and Mercy is a great film.
I'm hearing more and more momentum about the Brian Wilson biopic, which is one of the most original biopics I think I've ever seen. And, we're going. You mentioned these luncheons. We've been going to a lot of these things, and I'm polling more and more people. And that movie is surprisingly coming
Love and
up
Mercy?
As something. I don't think it's going to win anything, but I'd love to see Paul Paul Dano get nominated?
Paul Dano, who I was never really a big fan of. I mean, I just never gravitated to
this
guy as an actor.
Man.
But
he's great.
But he's great. He looks like Brian Wilson.
There
and
will
he's great
be blood.
And
there, I mean, think
and
of
I even
stuff
like,
he's done.
I thought it was
Sparks.
The fact that they had another person play, yeah, John Cusack play the older Brian Wilson, and people say, well, that was really off base. I think it was artistic and interesting choice, and I really liked it. You know,
it work, and it does.
And he does, and he has interesting chemistry with Elizabeth Banks, who
you
plays
your spotlight,
Cadillac dealer.
Your spotlight isn't so perfect. I mean, we were I was talking to some other people about it last night. I mean, the Liev Schreiber character, this gives nothing away, who comes in to sort of change everything and
Marty Baron.
Put the spotlight people on notice, never really does. Mm. He never goes back to them and says, you know, we got to hurry this story up or we're going to cut your division.
No,
there's a setup there in an initial meeting between he and Michael Keaton that suggests that there's going to be some a hatchet over them. Never happens.
I wonder if all those real reporters are out delivering the Boston Globe today.
We went to a luncheon, Bill and I, a dinner, actually, and I met the real guy who plays Michael Keaton plays in the film, and I was saying, you know, look, it's a two-hour movie, and you worked on this thing for, you know, the story for a year and a half, and he goes, no, look, they took some license, I have a big meeting and call some guy out on a golf course, that meeting didn't happen on the golf course, but I do play golf with the guy, and we do have a guy. So he goes, basically what you see is, you know, it's a condensed version of it, but it's pretty much true.
Well, how about this taking convention? They didn't break the story. The Phoenix broke the story. Did you hear that?
Oh, the Boston
what?
Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Phoenix, the underground paper broke the story.
The Boston Phoenix?
Yeah. And then the Globe picked up the story a year later.
No, I was not aware of that.
Listen, there's what happens, and we should explain to people. Like, the other studios start doing smear campaigns. They start going, hey, here's what's wrong with your spotlight. Your spotlight gets it all wrong, see?
So basically, when they do that, they are imitating Edward G. Robinson from a 1930s gangster film. Okay.
Well, you know, you talked about smearing. Now there's sort of a dark side to the dark side to Star Wars. All of a sudden, that's getting negative.
Yeah, that was in a honeymoon for the first week, and it got incredible reviews and everything. Now people are going, nah, not so much. I mean, the real Star Wars fans are saying, this is a veneer. It's a really good checklist. And we talked
about
that.
That's what I said in my review.
Boom, boom, boom,
boom. I said to J.J. Abrams, it was the greatest hit.
How come everybody knows how to use a lightsaber so easily? And how come there's lots of questions that people are
Everybody loves to take down a winner, you know what I mean? Well, do you think Star Wars is going to get nominated for an Academy Award? I mean, because it was screened too late to get a Golden Globe nomination, but the Critics' Choice added it. Our organization,
move by Jerry Berlin.
Yes, they added it. But do you think it's going to get a Best Picture nomination? There's 10 nominations. Do you think Star Wars will be in that, or do you think it will be, The Martian?
You know what? If it doesn't, will take that spot? Let's say there's one spot for the big commercial movie that has.
Well, Martian. They say the Martian.
Well, the Martian's a lock. That's not a problem. The Mad Max. Mad Max will be
well,
the
Well, we have a person on
more,
our TV show.
I think there'll
show.
Be more big studio movies.
Justine Browning, who will be joining us on the podcast next week, who's one of our panelists, alternating panelists on the TV show, she thinks Mad Max is going to win Best Picture of the Year. And I think that it's going to be Spotlight. And I disagree with you, McCuddy. I think it is a really great film. And it's such an important film.
That's what everybody's telling me.
Well, I also love the fact that, you know, being in journalism, and I work for a television station where something happens and you have to turn it around and get the story on the air like 3 hours later. Here it's like, what do you guys work on here with the Boston Globe? Well, we're in this unit called Spotlight. Well, what are you working on now? Well, we just take our time and we wait to find a story that we like. And we haven't found anything yet. Well, when you find the story, how long is it? Well, as long as it takes to get it perfectly. And they took like a year and a half to work on that story. Who has that luxury of time? I mean, that's just great.
By the way, who listening to this, who hasn't seen the movie, would go based on what you just said? I'll tell you, nobody.
Well, it's a great movie. Great performance. Liev Schreiber, Michael Keaton, Mark Ruffalo, Rachel McAdams, John Slattery, Stanley Tucci, Brian Darcy James. And they're all great. And it all shows you the inner workings of how how investigative journalism works. And, you know, when they bring when these people come forward who were, you know, in really just shamed and hidden for so many years that the secret that the priests molested them, and when the story broke, when those phones start ringing and they finally...
When it broke in the Phoenix a year earlier?
Well, I don't know if, you know, you said that it's a smear campaign. I mean, I've never heard that before, you know what I mean?
What I'm saying is that this time
maybe it was
of year,
I don't know what the circulation of the Phoenix is. When the Boston Globe did the story, that's when it became worldwide attention. I don't know how much attention was given to the Boston Phoenix story. You know what I mean? I don't.
Well, we don't know from the movie, do we? Because they don't mention it.
Well, you mentioned Room is your favorite movie of the year.
Was that on your top 10 list?
Almost made it. It's a great film. If I did a top 11, but why don't you tell people what Room was about?
An adjacent Room.
You mentioned Room,
spot.
But you didn't tell people what Room was about.
Brie Larson and her son, Jacob Tremblay.
He deserves an Academy Award.
I think he'll be nominated.
He's incredible.
He's wonderful.
Look, how old is that kid? Seven, six?
Seven, I think, when they
unbelievable.
When they started, yeah. They're held captive for 7 years in a room by... an asshole.
Yes,
predator. And I'm not giving anything away.
No,
they,
you're not.
They engineer an escape, and I find the second half of the movie, when they are reintroduced to civilization, to be very telling about how television works, about how families function and are dysfunctional,
and really great people in secondary, like Bill Macy's in it for 5 minutes, but he kills in it.
Yeah, he's great.
And Joan Allen, who's so underrated.
The mom.
Yeah, I know. She's wonderful.
Why did you teach me to be this forgiving? Why did you teach me to be about how she got abducted in the first place? Brie Larson is amazing.
I think that... You know, again,
and shame on you for not having it in your top 10, Neil Rosen. Shame on you.
Well, I
would it
say,
be in yours, Pergoli?
Yes, it would.
Brie Larson is great in it, but I still think if you're going to give an Oscar to somebody, I think that's no matter how good
she's
is.
Yeah, she's no Saoirse Ronan.
I'm not taking anything away from that performance, but let's say Brie Larson hit three notes. It's not a one note performance, three notes. I think Saoirse Ronan hit like nine notes. I mean, I really do. She went from a transformation from being this naive, sheltered immigrant in Ireland who moves to New York, and by the end of the movie, she's this worldly, sophisticated, like, New York person, and all these transitions happen in between. She's so expressive with her eyes. It's an amazing performance, and Emery Cohen, who plays her Brooklyn boyfriend, who's Italian plumber guy, also tremendous. And Domhnall Gleeson, who plays a love interest in Ireland, I'm not giving anything away, gives a great performance.
You're right. It's a strong female role for someone who comes to this country is miserable until she meets a guy. Yeah, that's good. that's great.
An Italian guy played by a guy whose last name is Cohen.
I love the movie.
And by the way,
I think it's about the immigrant experience, and you have to realize that it's 1952, okay? It's not 2016.
When it's okay to be miserable without a guy?
No, the guy made her made her happier in her environment.
He completed her, didn't he?
Yeah.
You complete.
Some other review.
I had you at hello.
Some other review mentioned that his family was one meatball short of a racial stereotype.
Yeah, or a sitcom. That whole thing with the little kid getting pulled out of the room.
I loved it. You have no heart, man. You're heartless.
Show.
You're heartless. Okay, also on my top 10 list, these are now not in any particular order. I thought the best comedy of the year was Spy, the Melissa McCarthy movie.
Yeah, I agree. That tied for my number 10 with Trainwreck.
That was Spy, Melissa McCarthy. Talk about going through changes. I mean, hitting different notes. She's this sheltered person who's
in the beginning. Every time they show her a new identity.
And she's doing like Chloe from 24, from Jack Bauer, giving instructions. And by the end, she's this super spy. And she's great.
And Jason Statham in that.
Jason Statham steals the movie.
Yeah.
I like your suit. I made this suit, and I made nine other ones. Just
I sewed on my own arm after it had been ripped off.
It's great.
She's like, I don't think that's even possible.
I think it's great.
Why do I have to have cats? Every ID they give her is like more of humiliating than the last one.
It's great. It's so funny. It's
Trainwreck also funny though. Admit that.
Trainwreck funny. No, Trainwreck funny. But Spy, my favorite comedy of the year.
Currently on demand. We should say give a little plug for the home team.
You mean another movie, Brugoli?
Kingsman: The Secret Service.
What?
What?
That's on your top 10?
Yeah, that was actually...
You're kidding me.
I know.
Wow.
We all go out there now and then.
Wow.
That was one of my favorite... That was a great one.
Wow.
Kingsman: The Secret Service.
Wow, yeah, great Sam Jackson turn.
Interesting. Sam Jackson with a lisp.
Sam Jackson was in one of my worst.
That looked great.
It was one of my worst movies of the year. That one where
he's the president.
The president and the plane goes down and the Native American
kid, or something.
It was, what a horrible movie that thing was. It's called Big Game, actually.
Do you know what's in his wallet? A lot of money.
That's very funny. You know, what else? Give me another thing that was on your top 10 list, McCarty.
I like the stranger stuff. I like Maru, which is the documentary about the guys who go up twice.
By the way, I watched my screener of Maru the other night.
Well, yeah. The thing that
halfway through, it went bad.
Really?
Just like their climb.
I couldn't see it. Come on, these guys told me this was really great.
It's true.
what I liked about Maru was I never heard of this. I mean, everybody, when you talk about climbing, it's like Everest. That's the pinnacle, you know, pun intended. But yeah, whoever heard of this thing? And apparently it's a harder climb. As we saw, I like the way those little sleeping bags hang off the rock is like...
It's like an 80-degree
angle straight up or something. That's good. I like Diary of a Teenage Girl. I don't know what you guys
think. Yeah, I like that too.
I mean, talk about a brave role from Alexander Sarsgaard. I mean, playing this guy who's sleeping with his girlfriend's...
Daughter.
Girlfriend being Kristen Wiig, you know, and I mean, but, you know, and such a dark subject matter and a twisted... terrible subject matter, and
it's funny in places.
It's actually humorous in places, and the girl is who plays the lead is she's wonderful. I really like that. And we were talking about Star Wars. I'd say one of my worst films of the year is Strange Magic, which was George Lucas's latest thing. I mean, it's like the worst children's film I ever saw in years, with bad covers of pop tunes. You know, when I interviewed Lucas, and he actually said to me, "This is my new Star Wars." I'm like, in my head, I'm like, "Are you kidding?" You know, like to this day, he ruined
even J.J. Abrams can't.
He ruined the movie, the song "Sugar Pie Honey Bun" for me.
But it was nice. It was nice of the white slavers to distribute his strange magic.
God, it was just
very nice of those white slavers.
I don't get it. What do you say?
Well, he referred to Disney having
about Star Wars
as white slavers, right?
Oh, right. Yes, that's true. I'm sorry, I didn't get the reference.
Closed caption for the comedy impaired.
That's funny. I liked Ant-Man. That's my favorite.
I loved Ant-Man. Yeah. In fact, when I did my top 10 and then sent it in and it got, you know, picked up, I was like, uh-oh, I forgot Ant-Man.
I put Ant-Man on my top 10. This glut of superhero movies that I was subjected to watch. I mean, from, you know, and they just, the list just went on and on from the Age of Ultron,
and
the Avengers.
About what a nice surprise it was, because you'd been avoiding it like I had for a long time.
Because I was like ODing on these comic book superhero films. And it came out at the end
and
of
Paul
the
Paul Rudd, who we love, is like, oh, this is a sellout for him. He's great.
Right.
Do you realize that's the highest money-making Marvel of all time?
Get out of here.
No, no, it's like...
Age of Ultron had
to... No. It's number 3 or 4 this year, so it certainly made more than Age of Ultron, I think.
I don't know about that. We're going to have to do the fact-checking on that one. But what I loved about Ant-Man...
We never let fact-checking get in the way of this show.
What I loved about Ant-Man... First of all, Paul Rudd co-wrote the thing, the screenplay, and it is funny. And as opposed to being this mishmash like an Avengers where you've got... all these stars in the movie, and okay, we've got to devote a 10-minute scene to, you know, Mark Ruffalo. He's the Hulk, and we've got to give 10 minutes to, Chris Hemsworth because Thor's in the movie, and gee, we've forgotten about Robert Downey. Here's a real simple story. And first of all, the story of Ant-Man doesn't even sound appealing. I mean, I remember there was this skit on Saturday Night Live, the original Saturday Night Live, when all the superheroes are at a party, and John Belushi is, I think he's the Hulk, and Garrett Morris is like, "Who are you?" And they're like, "I'm Ant-Man. I shrink down to the size of ants and communicate with the insects." And I didn't even know it was a real character, but it just sounds on paper awful. And here's a funny, engaging film. I mean, Paul Rudd is not, I mean, he's like, gets out of prison and he's working at a Baskin Robbins before he discovers this suit that can shrink him down to an ant. And it's like, yeah, I understand now how you can be the size of an ant and have these superpowers. And it's funny, it's clever. And I saw Michael Douglas on a talk show promoting it. They said, you know, you never did a superhero movie because nobody asked me. This was so much fun. And I'm going, yeah, he's just hawking this thing and promoting it. And then I watched it. I'm going, it is fun. It's great. So if you want to, it's on demand. It's on DVD. If you want to see something fun, I would see Ant-Man. All right, Brigola, give me another movie you liked. Hopefully it's more mainstream than your...
Did you like Revenant? Was Revenant in your top 10?
Not really.
I don't know. I had a hard time warming up to Revenant. I didn't have a horse.
You have
could
to go
eviscerate.
Wearing a horse. Yeah,
yes.
That's the trick.
I don't know.
You got any other choices?
I didn't like the character development in
But it wouldn't Revenant. Be on your worst list.
It wouldn't. No, absolutely not. No. My God.
Better than Hateful Eight or worse than Hateful Eight?
Oh, better than Hateful Eight. Hateful Eight annoyed me, to be honest.
Hateful Eight was too long, and it was forced, and I love Tarantino. I think it's
Scott Feinberg's number one or number two on the Hollywood Reporter
list. Yeah, I don't get that. One
of my worst was 50 Shades of Grey. I mean, that was just... Are they going to make that sequel now?
Of course.
Of course. That's already... They're shooting sequels back-to-back before both of them get too old.
Back to 51 Shades. Yeah, back-to-back, they can have sex that way.
And there's a parody coming out called 50 Shades of Black, and I think next month, which I'm actually looking forward to.
Like one of
the Wayans brothers.
Wayans brothers movies. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
And Batman v or Superman v Batman next year, I thought was going to be a legal movie. I thought it was about lawyers.
Famous
Supreme Court case, yes. But that would be the parody.
I have no desire to see that. I like those franchises separately, but I don't need to see that.
The problem with 50 Shades of Grey, and I, you know, like my wife read the book, and you know all these people read the book, and apparently even if
my wife read it like 10 times, really
slowly. Even if you're interested, and my wife is not interested in this, I'll clarify that. But for the people that found the S&M bondage aspect of the book to be interesting, that's not even really the movie is just they take all that stuff pretty much out of the movie.
I thought the movie was a hardware store ad. Buy some rope. Buy some.
It had an anesthetic look. No, really.
Ace Hardware.
Right. I don't think about it.
It had a really disappointing, like antiseptic look and feel. It could have been dirty and cool and grungy.
Right.
And
it was BDSM 101.
Had none of that. It was like a Disneyfied version.
Yeah. I know. It made actually 9.5
What's
weeks.
What's your worst movie? Of the year?
My worst movie of the year, I'll tell you my worst movie of the year, and I'm going to tell you a good runner-up. My worst movie of the year is this movie called Entertainment that nobody probably saw, that was on demand.
What do you mean nobody saw that? Well, you're right, nobody saw it, but I mean, like, critics were absolutely...
I hated
doing cartwheels over this.
It's about a washed-up stand-up comic who's old, and he's forced to perform like in the desert and like
cut very close to home for me. You're right. I see you looking at me.
And it just was the most incoherent mess of a movie. I also hated this movie. You know, it's funny. I like Joy, which I think
Joy's
we
in my
talked
top
about
ten.
That. But you know, David O. Russell did a movie last year called Accidental Love.
He did it like 5 years ago.
But it came out last year.
It came out last year.
Jessica Biel gets a nail stuck in her head. Did you see this, Brigola? Yeah, and she becomes kind of crazy.
Why do I want to always?
And it's just a mess.
It's a screwball comedy they have to hit perfectly or they don't work at all, and this is a perfect example of that.
And again, from the David O. Russell camp. I mean, so that's a bad David O. Russell film.
Right.
He's the great director who did The Fighter and did Silver Linings Playbook. All this stuff. And he always uses Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper. So they're in a movie called Serena, which was a real nosedive.
That would be probably my worst.
That's awful. The Cooties, about a virus that hits a high school with Rainn Wilson and Jack McBrayer from 30 Rock.
That's funnier than you're making
is just just awful. So there's some really bad, and the Parks and Rec guy, I think, is in there. Isn't Offerman in that one?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's just, and if he's not, my apologies to you, Offerman, if you're not in that. But here's some other movies I liked from the year. I liked a movie called Fort Tilden. I liked a movie called Dirty Weekend with Matthew Broderick and Alice Eve. I really liked this movie with Jason Schwartzman called The Overnight.
I like The Overnight, too.
The girl from Taylor Schilling from Orange is the New Black, Adam Scott, and Jason Schwartzman. Yeah. I mean, this couple moves from Seattle to Los Angeles with their kid, and the kid's in a playground, and the kid meets another kid, and they start having a play date, and Jason Schwartzman's the parent of the other kid. He goes, oh, you're new to where you moved. We moved from Seattle. Oh, tonight's pizza night. Come over to the house. We're all having pizza.
Look at my paintings.
Yeah, look at my paintings of assholes.
He's a very anal retentive painter.
He makes paintings literally of buttholes, and it turns out they're crazy, twisted swinger people.
For those of you
people.
Counting, that's our second asshole reference.
And it was the show.
We're PG-13 this week.
Schwartzman's brilliantly funny, and it's
great. It's kind of
funny
for him.
It's such a funny movie, and that's on demand, and you could check that out too. And you could check us out next week when we talk about a whole bunch of other movies that are coming on demand.
What are we talking about next week?
We're talking about, nothing's hitting the theaters. Irrational Man, the Woody Allen movie, is coming out on DVD. And
any interviews from that?
And
we'll look for it.
I have plenty of Irrational Man stuff.
Yeah. Great. And we're talking about The Walk next week, which also comes out on demand and DVD, which is with Joseph Gordon-Levitt walking that tightrope line across the World Trade Center back in the 70s.
And Rent Man on Wire. Man on a Wire?
Man on Wire. Yeah. We'll talk about that next week.
Awesome.
That's a great documentary. And maybe we'll talk about Point Break, the remake.
Yes, let's talk about that.
Let's talk about that. I'm going to surprise you with my take
on that.
We'll
talk about the remake of Point Break.
That's a great idea.
And that's it. So for Bill Bregoli.
Yes, man.
And for Bill McCuddy.
That's my name.
And
just
me, Neil Rosen. Thanks for our first show of 2016. You're sitting around talking movies with us, and we'll sit around talk movies with you real soon. Thanks a lot.